So you want to know the ins and outs of managing your money. Well, lucky for you, you're just in time for another episode of Master Your Finances with certified financial planner professional, Kurt Baker. Kurt and his panel of experts are here for you and will cover topics from a legal and personal standpoint. They'll discuss tax efficiency, liability, owning, managing, and saving your money, and more. Master Your Finances is underwritten in part by Certified Wealth Management and Investment and Rider University. Rider offers continuing studies programs for adults who need flexibility. Want to add new skills to your resume? Take a continuing studies course at Rider University. Now, let's learn how we can better change our habits with Kurt Baker.
Looking for ways to enhance leadership and team dynamics in your business? Meet Rich McLaughlin, an expert in transforming small business teams with over 20 years of experience. Tune in as Rich reveals practical strategies for driving growth and fostering a collaborative workplace. All right, Rich, thanks for coming on. I know you're kind of an expert in this space. So kind of help us out with, how you got involved and what you see going on out there. And because you deal mainly with small to mid-sized businesses, right? My understanding?
Correct. Yep. Thank you, Kurt. And as I was thinking about this, really my first two most formative experiences that led me to this work happened in college, believe it or not, when I was a floor supervisor for a couple of years, and I had to kind of get 56 guys to play nicely together. And I learned very quickly.
In college? That's awesome.
Yes. And I learned very quickly that I needed to have to be able to have conversations with people around what's okay and what's not okay. And I also kind of learned the difference between trying to drive compliance versus commitment. And of course, I wanted to get to commitment and not get them just to comply. And that required me to, you know, use all different kinds of ways to engage them rather than resort to using my authority, which I knew was not the right answer. So that kind of got me started on this path of paying attention to how do you really engage folks in the most effective way and ultimately teams that you're on or trying to lead. The other one that was interesting that happened in that same time period is my senior year. I got to, I was a manager at our student union. So it was another leadership experience leading peers. And I got, we were hosting a national or a regional conference at our student center. And I happened to submit a proposal for a workshop on motivation. And lo and behold, it gets accepted. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I got to go put this together now. So I knew going in that, well, look, I'm 22 years old, a senior in college, and all the people that are going to be in my breakout session are all going to be older, full-time working folks. And I'm sitting there thinking, how are they going to react to this 22-year-old talking to them about motivation? And I knew that trying to come across as an expert was not going to be the right way to go. So I came up with a design where, in essence, I just kind of threw questions out to them at the tables, asked them to discuss, and then facilitated conversation around, you know, what did you guys discuss? Where'd you land? And got a great response to that. And they really enjoyed that. I think I honor the wisdom in the room. And so they appreciated that. And suddenly the light bulb went off where I realized I don't have to be the smartest guy in the room to facilitate a conversation. I just need to know how to facilitate. So that really kind of jumpstarted me into this work and gave me a lot of courage around walking in any room and knowing that I don't need to be the smartest person in the room. In fact, that's probably going to work against me if I try to be. So I've tried to take that lesson to every team I've worked with over the years and to the leaders of those teams to get them to understand that if you want to get the most out of your team, you know, you want to bring some humility to the conversation and let them show you how smart they are.
I would agree 100%. I think it's incredible that you figured that out at 22 years old, frankly. So I think the old styles, I don't want to date ourselves too badly, but the old style was really top down management, right? You set out the rules and regs and, you know, almost like the military, this is the way it's done. And it's worked for, you know, a couple hundred years. So listen to me and do it this way. Right. Whereas the newer style is more about, I'm going to assign you with a task or a project and you can work on the details as long as we end up meeting the goals. And I'll coach you along if that becomes necessary at some point, but as much as I can rely on your experience, the better. And I agree. You it sounds like you created essentially a mastermind group by facilitating the expertise in the room of people that were much older than you and more experienced and respected that expertise, which I know now being on the other side of that fence,
mm-hmm.
having a 22-year-old come in the room, I'd be like, I don't know. Let me
exactly.
I'm not so sure. I'm not sure how much they're going to add to the conversation. But if they got us to talk together, I could definitely see how I would be like, oh, that's pretty cool.
Right? Yes.
So did anything kind of, I'm just interested in like what maybe, that's a pretty insightful thing to know at 22 years old is the only thing I'm thinking. So,
well, I don't know if I was that conscious of it, honestly. I mean, I just kind of knew what wasn't going to work. I just knew that. I mean, it was almost the circumstance kind of drove it from the standpoint of, I was like, well, I can't go in there as an expert. It's just, it would be laughable. So I almost resorted to, let me go with something that I think might work. And then it did. And I got a positive response and I'm suddenly going, oh, okay.
Great.
Be the most knowledgeable person to be up front leading the conversation. And that was the light bulb.
No, I agree 100%. So now that you learned your kind of your genius there, you figured that out, which is awesome. Where did you go from there to try to help business owners and people really kind of produce a better product and be more efficient in the way they do things?
Yeah. So for a while I was doing it more on the larger corporate side, where I was doing a lot of leadership development type of work and working with teams and folks in leadership positions, just trying to get them to, you know, work together as efficiently and effectively as possible. More recently, I just kind of pivoted to focusing on small businesses, and partly just driven by the fact that most people, if you look at the data, work for small businesses. They don't work for large corporations. And B, I just like the idea of seeing small businesses succeed. So I think, as you can imagine, a lot of these small business owners and entrepreneurs, they know maybe their business, they know their service, but they're not necessarily schooled in how do I lead and manage other people. And so that's a lot of our work from the what we call our EOS practice, where we're just helping those folks in those leadership positions learn how to develop the people underneath them so they can grow and actually have some time to enjoy running the business, not feel like they have to do it all.
And I would agree again. I think one of the small business owners, and I will throw myself into that ring, we're pretty good at what we do. But as you try to expand and bring in more employees, you kind of feel like, how do I let go of this stuff? Because honestly, many times you are doing things better than the people you're handing it off to.
Sure.
But yeah. It's literally impossible to grow unless you inspire others to take on those tasks that really aren't the best use of your time to begin with, and just trust the process to let them grow into it. And at some point they'll exceed your abilities too. I mean, long-term, if you do it right, you're going to end up with people that are much better at different tasks than you are when they first come into the process. So how do you talk to a small business owner such as myself and say, hey, I think we've got a process here where you can let go of some of these things because this is their baby. You know, they grew this thing from nothing.
Yes.
And when you start asking them to hand off things, that's a little painful for some people. I know, me included. So how do you get them to buy into that psychology and then work the process itself?
Well, you know, if there was an easy answer to that, I'd be making a lot of money at this point.
Yeah, but, well, you know, that's the challenge. At least, yes. I'm, you know, just being honest with you.
No, you are absolutely right. That is the fundamental.
You can do different examples. I know we're all different. We're not all the same, obviously.
Right.
But just, you can give me some examples of people that you've worked with and, you know, some of the things you ran into and how you kind of worked them through that process themselves. Yeah.
So one of the things is a lot of holding up the mirror, right? Where you're asking them, you know, tell me about how you're doing it today. And then how much of that of your time is being eaten up doing all of these things, and asking questions like, all right, so how long is that sustainable for you? And are you enjoying working 80 hours a week, feeling like you got to do everything? And is that, you know, how's that working for you? So just asking some basic questions to get them to kind of slow down for a minute and really evaluate, is this going to get us where I want us to get to? And it, you're right. There's an element of letting go that they all struggle with, I think, to a degree, because, you know, they know that, well, if I do it, I know it's going to get done, and I'll get done the way I like it. All of those things. And rarely are they able to just switch it on and off and kind of go immediately to, yeah, I'm going to completely let go. And, you know, so there's a weaning off process, and we use some tools with them to kind of help them start to identify. One of them is called our delegate and elevate tool, where we just kind of basically ask them to look at, you know, what are you really good at and you have a lot of passion for? And then what are you, you know, really good at, but don't have a lot of passion for? And there's some criteria we run by them just to get them to start to sort out some of those things and make it easy for them to start saying, yeah, you know, I probably should let this go. Even though I like doing it, because it keeps me in the weeds, and I got to get out of the weeds. And so part of what we're trying to show them in the big picture is you got to work on the business. You can't just be 100% running the business, because you'll never get any traction and get any movement if you're constantly running the business every week. Mm-hmm. So a big part of the EOS process is just getting them to realize that, you know, about 20% of my time on any given day or week, I got to be working on the business with my team and let the folks we've hired run the business. And otherwise, you know, we're just going to spin our wheels and stay in, you know, the holding pattern we're in.
Absolutely. I agree 100%. We're going to take a quick break now. Are you listening to Master Your Finances? We will be right back.
Master Your Finances on 107.7 The Bronx is underwritten by Certified Wealth Management and Investment Princeton. In a society that runs on money, you need to know and understand what's happening with yours. Certified Wealth Management and Investment will guide you on the path to financial well-being and show you how to make your money work for you. Kurt Baker, a certified financial planner professional, will work with you to establish a detailed, goal-based plan that will accommodate your financial needs and exceed your financial expectations. Kurt will also help you navigate the often confusing world of retirement, Medicare, insurance, and more. CWMI is a registered investment advisory company focused on personal financial planning, as well as small business planning, estate planning, and several other fee-based and non-fee-based services. For more information on how to reach your financial peace of mind with Certified Wealth Management and Investment by phone, it's 609-716-4700 or online at CWMI.US. That's CWMI.US.
This is Master Your Finances with Kurt Baker, Certified Financial Planner Professional. Learn about tax efficiency, liability, owning, managing, and saving your money, and more from Kurt and his experienced panel of guests. Master Your Finances is underwritten in part by Certified Wealth Management and Investment and Rider University. Rider University offers flexible education for adult learners. For more information, it's rider.edu/next step.
Okay, you're listening to Master Your Finances. I'm here with Rich McLaughlin, and we're going to continue on with our conversation as this EOS system, which is pretty well established in the business world, right? Entrepreneur operating system. And part of the problem is we as entrepreneurs are very good typically at creating businesses and finding and meeting a need of a client base of some kind. However, when it comes time to grow that business beyond a certain amount, and we're all a little bit different, we hit a pain point where we simply cannot work any more hours based on the structure we have in place that we've grown by. And now this is where coaching and processes and things like that truly benefit us if we'll listen and we'll actually implement them, because it'll free up our time to really focus on what we do best, which is usually meeting the needs of our client base and truly helping them in a way that no one else can, because we saw the original need ourselves, frankly. So a lot of these pieces we can put in place. I know I've done things like try to get rid of my inbox, try to get rid of accounting, try to get rid of a lot of these things that I can do, but they're very time, they take up a lot of time. If you start adding it up, it's hours and hours a week that could be better on me serving my client base. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I would prefer to do and what I enjoy the most. So Rich, what kind of things do you see happen with different entrepreneurs, and how do you walk them through this simple but difficult process?
Yes, great question. So one of the things I like about the EOS model and the tools is that they're not hard to understand. They are pretty simple, and we start with this kind of model where we say we're going to look at six areas that every business owner needs to look at. And they're not going to surprise anybody. First one being the vision one. Are we all on the same page around where we're trying to go, how we're going to get there? And if I pulled aside anybody working in the business at any given moment, and I asked them, what are you working on? And how does that connect to where we're trying to go? That they would be able to explain that to me and make that very clear. If I could do that, you are doing really well on the vision end. Now, I would say in most cases, that's probably, they're not quite there. Maybe the leadership team's all on the same page, if that. Even sometimes we find that even the leadership team's not on the same page. So we start there. Let's get the leadership team on the same page around where we're trying to go. And then we ultimately got to communicate that to everyone so that they all kind of understand when they show up each day, what's this thing we're trying to move forward. So vision is one. The second one is where you see a lot of the issues come up, and that is the people category. So, and in the people category, we look at two things. We look at first, do we have the right people inside here from a culture fit? Do we, we want to attract people that fit our value system in terms of, how we want to work together and how we want to see this business grow and the way we interact together. So that's the first question. Do we got the right people from a culture fit? And the second one is a little trickier, and that is, do we got the right people in the right seats? So it's a kind of a Jim Collins, if you're familiar with the Good to Great stuff, talking about, this is a classic thing that happens in a family-run business. Uncle Joe is in a marketing role because he was a warm body that we knew at that time, right? But when we step back and look at that, we realize, I'm not sure Uncle Joe is the right fit for that role when we think about what we really need in that role. So part of our job is to kind of, hold the mirror up and say, you're telling me this is what you need in this role. And right now you're saying Uncle Joe is not quite the right fit for that. So maybe we can find something else that plays to Uncle Joe's strengths. And then let's start working on getting somebody that fits that role a little bit better. So that's a. So a lot of the stuff comes up in the people one. So we go from vision to people. Then we go to the data side, and that's nothing more than making sure we're managing by fact rather than emotion of the moment. And, are we looking at the right 5 to 15 maybe key metrics that we need to keep on top of to know the health of the business? And so first and foremost, it's just kind of figuring that out. And it takes sometimes we find in working with clients, it might take up to a year working with them to get their scorecard kind of right, meaning where we finally kind of fine-tuned it to the point that, yes, these are the things that if we keep on top of these, it gives us a kind of a leading indicator of where we're going and how we're doing. So, but that takes some time. So we tell them, don't, we're not going to get that the first time we sit down together. We're going to work that over time. And then ultimately, everybody in the organization should have some metric that they know that this is what helps me drive my part of the business here that I got to pay attention to and own. So that's vision, people, data. Then we go over to what we call the issues box. And that is once we start looking at vision, people, and data, we start to notice issues pop up. Every company has issues they're trying to stay on top of, and we're just trying to show them a discipline around how do we keep track of them, and then how do we address them in a diligent way? And we talk them through a process that we use around that. We just call it IDS for short, meaning we identify what the issue is, what the real issue is. Then we discuss it briefly, and then we solve it. Somebody has to own it, or a couple people have to own it, and they have to tend to it between this meeting and next meeting. And so that we don't just talk about it. The last thing we want to do is get together and just talk about our issues. We want to resolve them. So that's a discipline thing. Nothing magic about that other than being disciplined about how we run those, what we call level 10 meetings. Level 10 meaning every time we get together, we want to feel like we are focused, we're working stuff through, we're discussing and using our time effectively. And we come out of that meeting feeling like that was a 10. Terms of quality of the meeting. So, we may not get there every time, but we want to shoot for 10 as our response to, was that a good use of our hour or 90 minutes, whatever it might be. After issues, we go over to process, and it's nothing more than saying do we have our processes documented at some level so that we can bring people on and train them and scale not a 100-page SOP type of thing, but maybe a couple of pages for each of our core processes so that we can train and coach people accordingly, so that we are following the process that we tend to follow 80% of the time. It's not worrying about the 20% of the variations that come up. It's really, what do we do 80% of the time? Let's make sure we got that documented. And then similar to the vision, that everyone's following those, that process, so that we all know this is how we do our work. Last one is what we call traction. Traction is nothing more than quarterly figuring out what are our rocks or goals that we need to tend to as we work on the business. Meaning every quarter, the leadership team, as well as people throughout the organization, has certain things that they're tasked to do that improve the business, so that it's, we're working on the business while we run the business. So 80% of the time we'll be running the business, but we want to spend some of our time each week working on the business. So everybody has rocks that they're working on. And when we come to our meetings, we're updating each other about where we are on our rocks. And that's where a lot of the accountability comes in. So that everybody knows each quarter, I got a rock or two that I'm working on, and I'm accountable to the team to deliver on that rock, so that we can move this business forward. That's the six areas.
That's awesome. That's really awesome. Yeah. So I the first thing I heard in the first one was really getting on the same page, I think, with the mission of the company. I know a lot of companies have a clear, concise, you know, statement of their actual mission, like who do they serve, you know, what kind of gets us up in the morning. Because you hear this over and over again, where you know, companies kind of lose sight of what their, you know, their true mission is.
Yes.
Right. So are you, I don't know what was, I'm trying to think of some examples now. So I don't know, like, you know, Blockbuster thought they were in the CD delivery business, mm-hmm. but they were actually in the movie content delivery business. So when Netflix came along and found a better way to do their business, they wiped them out.
Right.
So sometimes you lose sight of like, how are you actually really serving the client? And as times adjust and change, are you truly doing it in the best way for the client experience, right?
Right.
And I know even like financial services going through that, right? There's a lot more involved in the advanced planning side of it than just investment management, right? It's an evolving business, and every business has an evolution they're going through. And if you're not evolving, that means you're probably being disrupted and don't realize it.
Yes. So, yes.
So great. You have to be careful. So do you have any examples of like where like companies have kind of really noticed something and said, hey, we're not really in this business. You know, maybe we're in, you know, in this business instead. Right. So I know I've seen that time and time again where people lose a little bit of track of what they think they do, but that's not really what they do.
So, right. Right.
I don't even need
it's a great question. We, you know, in that vision piece, we spent some time talking about, you know, what's our core focus and, you know, what are we really good at? You know, how are we distinct from others if we are? Those kinds of questions. You know, as I was listening to you, the thing that popped into my head that I think a lot of people are trying to figure out right now is what's AI going to do to our market, right? The ChatGPTs and the other AI platforms out there, where what is now you would think of as brain work of sorts, if it can be routinized, that's a prime target for AI disruption. Where, you know, the one that I was told about a few years ago was radiologists. You know, you can put scans of, you know, those script scans into a AI app, and with 98 point such and such percent accuracy, they're going to be able to tell you what, if anything's going on in that scan. And so that means, well,
they have to do something with it, no matter how good AI gets. At some point, I believe in a human being needs to get involved. So we're going to
evolve. Absolutely.
But yeah, we're gonna take another quick break. You're listening to Master Your Finances. We'll be right back.
Master Your Finances on 107.7 The Bronx is underwritten by Certified Wealth Management and Investment Princeton. In a society that runs on money, you need to know and understand what's happening with yours. Certified Wealth Management and Investment will guide you on the path to financial well-being and show you how to make your money work for you. Kurt Baker, a certified financial planner professional, will work with you to establish a detailed, goal-based plan that will accommodate your financial needs and exceed your financial expectations. Kurt will also help you navigate the often confusing world of retirement, Medicare, insurance, and more. CWMI is a registered investment advisory company focused on personal financial planning, as well as small business planning, estate planning, and several other fee-based and non-fee-based services. For more information on how to reach your financial peace of mind with Certified Wealth Management and Investment by phone, it's 609-716-4700 or online at cwmi.us. That's CWMI.
This is Master Your Finances with Kurt Baker, Certified Financial Planner Professional. Learn about tax efficiency, liability, owning, managing, and saving your money, and more from Kurt and his experienced panel of guests. Master Your Finances is underwritten in part by Certified Wealth Management and Investment and Rider University. Rider University offers flexible education for adult learners. For more information, it's rider.edu/next step.
Welcome back. You're listening to Master Your Finances. I'm with Rich McLaughlin, and we're talking about how AI might be affecting us. That's where we left off, and I think that's a fascinating topic right now. So tell us a little bit about your thoughts, and I'll follow with my thoughts about it. So how do you think AI is going to affect these small businesses that you're currently working with, and how are you talking to them, and what are they doing about it in general, if you want to tell me?
Yeah. So great question, and I think AI is going to impact us in ways we can't even imagine right now. And anything that can be routinized, even brain work that can be routinized is up for impact from AI. Now, you're going to see it, I think, much more in larger organizations where they have a lot of employees doing what I would call routinized work, claims processing or whatever the case may be, where they're doing thousands and thousands of things, where there may be some patterns in existence that the AI can pick it up a lot faster than the average human. I was thinking of one more recently in my kind of learning and development work, where I'm putting on workshops for clients, where I put into ChatGPT, I said, hey, I'm one of what should be in an XYZ workshop. And sure enough, within minutes, it spat out an outline for me. And I was like, wow, that was great. Now, of course, it didn't get me all the way there. I would say it got me about 80% there, because, you know, we were chatting earlier that it's never going to fully replace the human element, where we need to add some of our judgment as to, you know, it can only kind of give us straight generic content pulling from existing sources. It's not going to be able to provide nuance. And that's where the human eyes come into play. So I had to, you know, look at this outline and say, okay, yeah, it's about 80% there, but now I got to tweak it a little bit to polish the rough edges. So I think you have to look at it as a tool. It's going to help us do our jobs a little faster, a little easier. And why not allow that to happen? And just know that you're still going to need to be there to kind of bring the human element back into it.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. And I think people are first of all, you have to incorporate AI into your business. There's no question about it. If you don't, you're going to get disrupted out of whatever business you're in. It doesn't even matter. It could be anything. Mm-hmm. It could be mowing lawns for a living. At some point, if you don't throw AI in there, you're going to get disrupted by somebody who is. Mm-hmm. But the other side of it, I think, Rich, you talked about very well, is that we are human beings and we like to communicate with each other on a human level. So even if people are creating, like, you know, full blown content, educational programs and so forth, right? Mm-hmm. But if you think of it, if you went to a college or any high, you know, school, whatever school you went to, you could have the greatest book in the world in front of you, but somebody has to deliver and connect that information to you in a way that's on a personal basis that triggers your brain and helps you to learn the way that you learn. And, mm-hmm. and we're a long way from AI being able to do something like that. Mm-hmm. And frankly, I think no matter how good it gets, we still want to communicate with each other. It's just, this is going to do a lot of the grunt work.
Yes.
It's going to help us do that triggering our memory of, okay, we want to make sure we don't forget whatever. You just named six points that you have to go through the EOS process. If I didn't know any of those and I just said, hey, what are some things I should do to improve my business? Well, I can get, okay, now I've got the 6 points, but now I have to implement them. And right. Every business is different. And I have to come up with a very specific design based on my client base and based on who I am as a business owner and my employees. And everybody has to be working together to really focus in on that little fractile of a client that we're really trying to go after and assist. So I just think it's going to become a way for us to deliver services better, faster, mm-hmm. and more effectively mm-hmm. than in the past. And we're going to get to do the fun parts, the best parts, the things that we as human beings do really, really well.
Yes.
Which is to communicate with each other and help each other improve and do better.
Yes.
So that's my personal blog. My personal blog about all that. So.
No, I agree with you, Kurt. I mean, I was talking to somebody earlier today about that in my mind, content is free anymore, right? Because you can get content anywhere and everywhere. And of course, the ChatGPTs and the other AI platforms can give you all the mm-hmm. content you need. You still need to, A, connect with the people in the room and get them to and read the group and get them to a place where they will be open to being influenced by the content. And that's not something I think you can outsource to an AI application.
Definitely not. So that gets us to people. And that mm-hmm. was your point too, which honestly, I found the most intriguing and probably the area that I find to be this is personally again, the most difficult one to solve for.
Yes.
Because people are people, and you have to find ways to connect people with the things they love to do and they do best, and also to manage those people in a way that they run as independently as possible mm-hmm. and get the projects done. So I'm not working 80 hours a week overseeing this whole thing and I can mm-hmm. expand. So can you walk us through a little bit of that? Because that's an area I know that I remember Merv Griffin years ago, and I'm probably dating myself. He says is the number one attribute to his success was his ability to hire right.
Yeah, good for him.
And you hear that, you kind of hear that over and over with different people in different ways. And in fact, that's tech, right? Tech is known for hiring people and kind of letting them run mm-hmm. mm-hmm. you know? And letting them be creative and really solve problems very quickly. And that's why you see some of these companies go from nothing to, you know, multi-billion dollar companies in literally a couple years sometimes. Right. Because they've learned the power of allowing people to really produce in a way that if you tried to top down manage them, it would not occur. It just simply can't happen.
Yeah.
So anyway, what are your thoughts about the people aspect, and how do you get those? How do you find those right people, or how do you like reallocate the people you might already have? Mm-hmm. And then how do you bring in the new ones as you're trying to expand and you have to hire additional people to help out?
Yeah. Wow. There's a lot there to unpack. Let me So how do you get the right people in? So I go back to my college experiences again, and I've learned so many cool things going through that. So as part of the recruiting process to become a floor supervisor, I distinctly remember of course you went through your normal individual interviews with people, and you know how those go. They're going to end with your strengths and weaknesses, and they have a formula that. And those are fine. But what was interesting that they did is they put a number of the candidates in a room and sat in a circle and gave them a task to do together. And then others around the outside were watching. And what they were looking for was not that who's the smartest person in the group, and who could kind of dominate the conversation and sway the group. They wanted to see how well did we work together. And I thought that was so interesting when I came away and realized and asked them why they did it that way. And I thought, and so many companies, even to this day, still don't do that. I think.
Really?
Because I think in a one-on-one, in a one-on-one situation, you can always say the right things. Yeah, teamwork. I love it. I breathe it every day. But put them in a scenario where they actually have to work together with some teammates, you may see a different story. Nice. So I think we need to rethink about how we observe and evaluate people in both kind of one-on-one scenarios as well as within a team scenario, because you could probably think about, I might in a one-on-one scenario come across one way, but in a team scenario come across a very different way. So that's one way to think about how do I make sure I'm bringing the right people into the company that fit the value system that we're looking for. Mm-hmm. From the leadership standpoint, I find that I keep coming back to this notion that the really effective leaders always remember that my job is to focus on the what and the why and stay out of the how. And if I can do that, you're going to do two things. You're going to both give folks the necessary structure and sense of the lanes they need to stay in, because we need that and they need that. And you're also giving them the freedom that they desire in terms of how they go about doing their work, because everybody likes to express themselves in the way they do their work. And so as a good leader, I don't want to inhibit that. I want to give them that freedom, but I also need to give them some structure and some lanes so that we're not all doing our own thing. So I think most leaders kind of realize, yes, that's the line I have to straddle. I have to give some structure and some lanes, but I also want to give maximum freedom as much as possible. And know that not everybody loves that. There are some people that might want to come work for you that will sit there and tell you, no, I want you to tell me exactly how to do it. And then I'd say, well, they're probably not a good fit here. Because I don't want that. I don't want somebody coming in here with the attitude, I don't want to think, I just want to do what you tell me. You know?
I agree with that. And I believe you said it. When they have a clear indication of what are they doing, and I think the biggie was the why. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times you'll give people a project. Here's what we're going to do. If they don't understand why this is important to the service or product or whatever you're doing as a business, they'll lose sight of when they come across a challenge. They don't really, why do we need to do this? It doesn't make any sense to me. Right. But if management explains, this is why this is important to our overall company, because you're kind of segregated off maybe in this little task that you're doing, and you may not really see the big picture like leadership does. Mm-hmm. And they really need to share as transparently as possible, why are we doing all the things that we're doing, and allow them that flexibility to really solve, because they're right there on the front line, and they're going to see things faster than you will as far as, well, that maybe you thought that was the right way to do it, but this is what I'm seeing. Maybe this other way might be a little bit more effective. And they can test it and try it, and they can come back and say, look, I tried this other way, it's actually working better. So that's why I'm doing it. I think it's a really key way to push the decision-making process as far to the front line as you can, and still manage and control at some level, right?
Yeah.
We had another break here. Another break. We're gonna come right back. You're listening to Master Your Finances.
Master Your Finances on 107.7 The Bronx is underwritten by Certified Wealth Management and Investment Princeton. In a society that runs on money, you need to know and understand what's happening with yours. Certified Wealth Management and Investment will guide you on the path to financial well-being and show you how to make your money work for you. Kurt Baker, a certified financial planner professional, will work with you to establish a detailed goal-based plan that will accommodate your financial needs and exceed your financial expectations. Kurt will also help you navigate the often confusing world of retirement, Medicare, insurance, and more. CWMI is a registered investment advisory company focused on personal financial planning, as well as small business planning, estate planning, and several other fee-based and non-fee-based services. For more information on how to reach your financial peace of mind with Certified Wealth Management and Investment by phone, it's 609-716-4700 or online at CWMI.us. That's CWMI.us.
This is Master Your Finances with Kurt Baker, certified financial planner professional. Learn about tax efficiency, liability, owning, managing, and saving your money, and more from Kurt and his experienced panel of guests. Master Your Finances is underwritten in part by Certified Wealth Management and Investment and Rider University. Rider University offers flexible education for adult learners. For more information, it's rider.edu/next step.
Welcome back. You're listening to Master Your Finances. I am here with Rich McLaughlin. The people, I think, is always the biggest challenge. But once you get that figured out, you talked about managing the data, which of course is really, really important. And all of us should be tracking and managing our data. And then as the issues pop up, you need to address those issues. But the one in this last segment I really like to delve into a little bit is that process long-term, because just from what I've noticed is that until you kind of get your business into a systematic process that can be easily explained to somebody else, either internally or externally, you really don't have a business that's easy to manage, and when you go to sell it, you have to, or bring in investors, you need to be able to easily explain this is how we actually are, why we're successful and how we're doing it. Mm-hmm. So what are your thoughts about that? How to get that business really to that point where it's a systemized process,
yeah,
process that works, right?
Yeah. Great question, Kurt. And it made me, it makes me think about when did I suddenly kind of develop my process mindset, I'd like to say. And so for me, it happened back during one of my internal jobs when I was working for a big manufacturer and I was going around a bunch of their plants. And I was part of the total quality management education effort at that time. And it was a big emphasis on understanding your system, right? And so inevitably the people at the plant would want to take me on a plant tour. And so it would often start wherever they found me. And, oh, I'll start here. And so, you know, I might be in the admin building and I mean, this is the finance group. And I would always stop them after maybe the first couple. And I say, no. Take me to receiving. Start me there as if I'm raw material coming in. And then take me through the plant the way raw material goes through the plant and ends up at shipping. So I can really very quickly understand what you guys do here. And so to me, that was way more enlightening to get me up to speed very quickly about what goes on there, how they run their overall process, and where the pain points might mm-hmm. be. And so ever since I've kind of had this, I guess what I would call a process mindset and try to get people to understand that a lot of times it's not that people come to work planning on screwing up, the process gets in the way. And so when mistakes happen, you know, my caution to leaders is don't look for people to blame, look at the process, because usually it's the process that's getting in the way and just making it difficult for them to do their job. Sometimes it might be the people, but it's usually not. It's usually a process issue going on. So part of what we do is work with these leadership teams to first, again, document at a high level. This is how we do it. Because sometimes I think, as you can probably imagine, they don't even know. They just kind of show up and do it every day. And they don't necessarily mm-hmm. take the time out to say, let's document what we do. Because otherwise, how do we scale? How do we bring people in? How do we show them what we do other than, you know, trying to just do it by memory? So that's the first part. And then by having it written down, then they can start to make decisions about, is this the smartest way? Can we simplify it? You know, is it too complicated? Until it's down, it's hard to know whether, you know, we don't see the unnecessary WeWork loops. I was just with a group in DC last week, and they had a number of reviews that went on as they were asked to release these grants. And as we started to map it out, they started to realize that we've got a lot of rework loops that don't need to be there. And so once you see it, once you put it up on paper and you can see it up on the wall, so to speak, suddenly the light bulbs go off and they can just see that, wow, this doesn't make sense. So that's why we ask them to document it, put it down on paper. And because just doing that helps them to start to realize that we got processes here that are more complicated than they need to be. Maybe they made sense at the time, but they may no longer make sense based on the way the business has evolved. So it's not, again, it's nothing rocket science, but it's something about getting them to put it down. I find that when I get people in a room and we put it up on the wall and have them direct their attention to the process, they stop blaming each other and start looking at the process.
Wow. I mean, that's amazing. So once you get that process like nailed down, and I what I heard you say is that, and I think this is critical, like you actually document what you're doing. And I think when any of us does this, you just sit down and document what you do during the day, whether you're a business owner or you're a line person, you know, working in a factory. If you literally write down like what I'm doing, and then you figure out, well, why are you doing it this way? You kind of take a little bit of a step back, and you never know. I mean, you might come up with some ideas that might make things more efficiently. I remember years ago, I was reading how like Toyota was trying to out-manufacture Ford back in the days of the line thing. And Toyota came up with the idea of the U-shaped,
yes.
Line, right? Because right. He found that they could move around back and forth a lot quicker. And just that simple change allowed him to make a Toyota cheaper with more stuff. Mm-hmm. than we were able to do here in the United States. And all he did was just change the line from a straight line to a U.
Right. Yep.
But he did that by having conversations with people on the line and figuring out this is a little bit better way. So let's give it a shot. Right.
Yeah.
And I think every business can do that. Just because you've been doing it for a long time and it's worked doesn't necessarily mean it's the best way.
Right.
Especially when you add all these new things that are coming at us right now that might be able to be implemented in your business. And you don't even realize how much more efficiency you can get out of it and more productivity. Right.
Yeah. So, yeah. And you said it, the people closest to the process usually know what's not working well because they're living with it every day. And they usually know what might be the right fix if we give them the time and space to even have that conversation. Because again, they're usually so busy just running the business that they don't stop to look at their process and say, there's got to be a better way.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's a conversation they have by themselves in a frustrating way because nobody's listening to them. So
that's I think is a key thing. Cause I've been on that end of it too, where I've been like an engineer working in a, you know, on a ship and things like that. And you're going, well, that's fine, but there's other ways we can do this and get it done a lot quicker and easier and cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
But there, and frankly, we just did it, but it was like, because we're on a ship, but if I was in a factory, that wouldn't necessarily be okay because right. Too many other people are involved. And when you have 20 or 30 people on a ship, it's not a big deal.
Right.
When you got like hundreds, if not thousands of people all involved, you can't just switch without management's approval. And that would get very frustrating over time if you're seeing that you're doing something in a way that it's just so evident to you that you could improve it. And they'll feel better about themselves if you listen to them and allow them at least to try it. They may be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But at least let them try. Let's find out whether or not, on a test basis, because they may have a very valid point, and most times they're probably going to be right because they're living it, right?
Yes, and yes, to your point, you want to encourage that kind of experimentation because now you're tapping into their creativity and you're letting them share their wisdom that they've culled running this process for months or years. So, yeah.
And I like the concept of self-disrupting.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you don't self-disrupt, somebody else is going to disrupt you for you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not a good experience. That's far worse
than you
self-disrupting.
Yeah,
if somebody comes in out of left field and just takes you out, mm-hmm. you're like, oh, wow, I never saw that coming.
Right.
But if you create a culture of kind of self-disrupting experimentation and allow your employees to take a little bit of risk, I think long-term, they're going to be happier because they feel more involved in the job and more involved in what's occurring. Because job satisfaction, people think it's salaries is why people leave, but it's usually about how they're being treated.
Yes.
And whether or not they feel part of the business, the community that they're mm-hmm. in, and are they making a difference?
Yep.
And if they don't feel like they're making a difference, they're going to get very frustrated and say, I want to go somewhere where somebody appreciates me.
Yep.
And I've seen people take pay cuts, significant pay cuts, to go to a business that they feel like is going to appreciate them and actually listen to them and allow them to contribute.
Yeah.
And why wouldn't you want that as an owner? You just need to tune yourself into these things.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and that brings us around back to the people thing, which it seems to always come back to that. And this is why we, in our work with the entrepreneurs and small business owners,
right.
we talk about, you do not want to discount the culture work because at the end of the day, that's what keeps people around, to your point.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so what are your final words for us here today as we wrap up? It sounds like it's the people, but any final thoughts? Because this has been an awesome journey.
Yeah. Wow. Jeez. I probably would always come back to, if I'm in a leadership position, is just to remind myself that my first responsibility is to make sure folks understand the what and the why, and then try to stay out of the how. And I think mm-hmm. if you do that, if you remember that kind of mantra, you're going to be in a good space for the most part. So focus on the what and the why, stay out of the how.
All right. Well, thanks, Rich. Appreciate Ray for listening. You can follow us at masteryourfinances.us and appreciate everybody listening. Take care.
All right, Kurt, thank you.
That was this week's episode of Master Your Finances with Kurt Baker, Certified Financial Planner Professional. Tune in every Sunday at 9 a.m. to expand your knowledge in building and managing your wealth. Missed an episode? No worries. You can subscribe to a free weekly episode of Master Your Finances to listen to on your favorite podcasting platform. Apple, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever. Master Your Finances is underwritten in part by Certified Wealth Management and Investment and Rider University. Rider offers continuing studies programs for adults who need flexibility. Want to add new skills to your resume? Take a continuing studies course at Rider University.